So I'm with Adrian today, and Adrian has been the guy helping me. And so, hi, Adrian.
Hi, Paul.
The number one thing I need to get out of you before I forget is that there's two things. One is, are you now? And I've only routed probably half of my email to you. And so now whenever the Dailyish email goes out, you are set up as the guy that will receive any responses to that. And then I went and modified a couple of other places to say, if you email Adrian, there's a better chance that you'll get a response than if you email me. So I think you're getting about half of my email now. So are you keeping up?
I have 74 unread emails right now.
And are those just from today?
No. They've been accumulating over the last 3 months, I guess.
Okay. All right. But each one of those contains an important thing that you need to deal with immediately.
I would say 75% of those 74 emails contain important information. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're marked as unread. And it's like, because that's what I do, is I mark them as like, oh, I need to get to that. And then it's like, it's just become ridiculous now. I don't even read them. There's a bunch of them. There's probably about a dozen a day or more that just go off into the ether, and I'll never see them again.
Yeah, that's what happens. Once it goes down to page 2 of Gmail, the likelihood that they will get read goes down exponentially.
Yeah, and so I think I'm pretty good at, like, well, one of the ones that I'm always good about, that I think I am, is when I notice that there's one where somebody says, I invoke the 48-hour rule. And I don't know if you get many of those, but if you get them, then you should send them on to me. And that's where somebody posts something out at Permies, and they ask a question, and they feel like they didn't get a good enough answer. Or they did get a good enough answer, but they want me to verify or validate or whatever. And those are my highest priority. I do those pretty much the instant I get them. But most stuff, and then so many people write a big, long email, and it's like when I open it and I see it's long, I think I'll have to come back to that later, which usually means I never come back to it. I think I said butt like 6 times. This is a chain butt, a butt chain. but. Every email that I've that's ever been sent to me, where it just simply is saying thanks, and it's like I've had like I don't know, I'm gonna guess 20, where it was a really long email, but it was something where people were just like saying awesome, lovely things, like just so glad and so happy, and you've changed my life, and those ones I do read all the way to the bottom, but I rarely ever reply to them, and I kind of feel bad about that. and there've even been a couple times where I'm like on a car trip somewhere, like we're going to a farm. And Jocelyn's driving, and I've got my little BlackBerry, and I can read it, so I read it out loud. and they are great. And last night I went out to dinner by myself. I just needed a change of scenery. It had been like a really good day and a really bad day at the same time, and then there was somebody recognized me at the restaurant. And so they visit with me. That was lovely. That's always great. I always feel good when people say hi and they recognize me. All right. And then there's people who actually send me gifts and stuff. And so I feel bad that I don't really respond to them either. So we've got it. Today's podcast is a buffet of different topics of like business and like what are things that need to be said in the podcast, And the number one thing at the list, Adrian was emphatic, it has to be at the top of the list, is to make sure to acknowledge people that are sending the emails, let them know that we're getting them, and that, you know, and I wanted to say my piece about how I feel bad that I'm not responding to the love letters, because really I should, whereas when I get the hate mail, that seems to be the thing. What? What the hell? So the kind email, the really good stuff, I do appreciate it. I'm glad you write, and I'm sorry. I feel awful that I don't respond. I'm in a really weird space where there's just so much to get done every day, and I can't describe it very well. But Adrian, I'm so glad you're in the boat with me now. You can see you can relate to how I feel.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're hip deep in emails, and they're coming in faster than you can read them.
Well, and the emails are only one portion of what has to be done. I mean, the list of things to do just keeps getting longer and longer, because good ideas bring better ideas, and then it's just like a sweater that you start pulling the wool, and then it just unravels on itself, like it doesn't end.
But it's the sweater of infinite.
It's a really, really large sweater.
it's the sweater for a mountain. Yeah. And on top of that, I think that the projects that we're working on all the time, and all the different tasks. I mean, I also gave you a list. I sat down. I gave you a list. We went over the list like on your first day. And what was your response to this list?
Where do I start?
I thought your response. So I know that you and I were talking about this like a week ago, and you were saying like, if I worked 80 hours a week for the rest of my life, I wouldn't finish even this list.
Yeah.
And did nothing else. And that's all you did was the stuff on the list. So so I'm just glad that there's somebody that can validate that I'm not crazy, and that, you know, this is for real. There is indeed this much work. Fortunately, we've been getting more volunteers.
Yeah.
And you've been coordinating with them and carving off pieces. So Cassie is now taking on Twitter and Facebook and Pinterest, and she might be doing some others too. But I noticed that I don't ever really look at Twitter, but I get emails for Twitter things, and it seems like suddenly I'm getting all these Twitter emails, and it's like I don't look at them, but by the quantity of them, it's like clearly something's going on over there. And on the Facebook one, I see that one, and I see that there's like she probably posts something out there three times a day.
Yeah, it's been pretty active, and lots of comments, and I don't know if it's much different than what it used to be, but I think it's building up.
Yeah, it's doing good things. That and plus, I think she knows what she's doing with it, whereas I never quite how to. I just kind of abused it. Put things here, and then I'd walk away. I just feel like it was disrespectful to the people that were like trying to get information from those places, and so yay, somebody's there to actually take care of it. And I know that there have been a bunch of different people volunteering all kinds of different things. And Alexander is now back from his PDC, so he's doing all sorts of stuff again. And then of course there's all the people that are the staff out at Permuse.com. That, you know, it's like, and then in fact, in the last few days, you know, we have some kind of ugly thing happen, and they've been great at like getting on top of it and smoothing it out. That's been fantastic. That's just such a relief to know that, you know, there's good, competent people like just always there. All right. So there are now well over 200 podcasts. I think there's like 230.
Well, it's going to be complicated to number, but it's going to be close to 240.
Well, I know that we've got the ones that I just finished about the Edo period, mm-hmm. and then and so that's a 10 podcast book review. We reviewed that book. There it is. It's called Just Enough by Asby Brown, and it's about the Edo period in Japan. And they had millions of people living in cities, but rather smoothly and not like, like you think millions of people in London, and it was like gross. And this is far, far cleaner and better. And yet still very, very simple and how they went about doing it. And so we completed that podcast series. And so we're going to do some experimenting with how that's done. But I think we're going to have one podcast come into the regular podcast stream. And then all the podcasts for that book are going to be a Scubly thing. Oh, and that's another weird one too, is we put out that podcast. That's the politics podcast.
Yeah.
That's been a bit odd. I mean, but we've had, I don't know, like more than a dozen people have actually paid $25 to hear my crazy rants on politics, which I try very hard to not share in this podcast. And I've had so many people ask me about it that it's like, and I'm kind of like, no. The moment I say these things, I'm sure that I'm going to drive off most of the listeners, because their standards will be different from mine, and so it's kind of like, all right, if you're so needing to hate me, then you got to pay me $25. You have to pay $25 to hate me, or to have a reason, to have a perfectly valid reason to hate me. That's been put up, and that's been an odd duck. But there it is, it's going. And so that's the Scubly thing is starting to turn out to be a pretty smart thing. And by the time this podcast comes out, the Kickstarter for the Rocket Mass Heater DVDs will be well underway. We got the approval from Kickstarter. I can hit the green button any moment now. Bart put together, he did the editing on the Kickstarter video, and he did an amazing job. And I don't know, it was just, he's extremely creative, and it was fun. It's like, it's far better than anything I've made. You've seen the video.
I did, yeah. And it's very promising for the four DVD set.
So, we took that. This is basically the video footage from October when Ernie and Erica had that super duper rocket mass heater workshop in Missoula. And there's just no way we could have squeezed it all into one DVD. So we're going to do four. The first DVD will be Fire Science. The second one will be Sneaky Heat. The third one will be Boom Squish. And the fourth one is going to be Hot Rocket. And so I think most of those titles are pretty obvious on what's going to be in them for people that listen to these podcasts, except for the last one, maybe. The last one's going to be talking about a J-tube-style rocket stove, where it did outperform the turkey cooker. And we also – it was so hot, and then Mark Vandermeer stopped by. And I think this is – so, Adrian, you were there for this workshop.
I was there except for the portion with the turkey cooker.
Right. In fact, everybody left, and then we continued on with this bit of the project. But it was like the next day or the night after you left or something like that, Mark Vandermeer stopped by. And he's a blacksmith. He's an amateur blacksmith. And so he's got his own forge, and he does all kinds of stuff. And he's looking at it, and he's like, that looks so hot. I wonder if you could – so they dropped the steel rod in there, and it took about 30 seconds for it to turn orange.
Wow.
And he was like, wow, that is way better than the forge that I have with the fans and the coal and all this stuff. And it's cleaner and all these things. And so next thing you know, we're fooling around, twisting metals and things.
And that's in the Kickstarter video. You see Ernie kind of forging some pieces of metal.
And so then that's going to be part of the last DVD. So the last DVD is going to be the J-Tube rocket stove plus pocket rockets plus this poor man's forge kind of thing. And actually, I think they're going to make a forge for Mark Vandermeer, and he's saying, anybody want to buy my coal? So, because it's like, wow, how convenient is this? You no longer need a fan. You no longer need to go buy coal. You can just use sticks that you already have gobs of.
Or junk mail.
Yeah, junk mail. So, I guess the thing is that for people to find the Kickstarter, I mean, I'm going to we'll put it at the top of all of the forum pages at Permies for the entire thing in the announcement section. So if you go to Permies and you go to the forums, it'll be there at the top, a video and a link to the Kickstarter campaign, and people can buy the DVDs and stuff like that. There's even a thing where I put a deal up for if you put in $20, we'll put your name on a page of one of the DVDs where it says, these people paid actual money to see their name here. I don't know, I just thought that'd be fun. And I did that for my last Kickstarter, and a ton of people did that. They wanted to see their name in the video. Okay, we can arrange that. No problem, man. All right, the next item I've got on my list is reusing my stuff. And how many emails are you getting right now where people are asking for permission to use my stuff?
I would say maybe once every second week or so.
Okay. I'm still getting like three a week, but you know that might be because they have my email address and they haven't found the one where I'm trying to direct people to you. But pretty much the rule of thumb is, and I think this is kind of an internet standard. It's considered to be totally okay. If you use one image and like a paragraph or two of the original content, as long as you make a prominent link back to where it came from. And so that's pretty much my policy. Although for my videos, everybody's welcome to embed those willy-nilly. No problem. Just embed those all you want. You don't have to make any further references or anything like that, because all the videos have a thing at the end about, you know, come on out to permies.com. Whereas there have been some people who thought it would be great to just copy the Hugel Culture article verbatim and put it on their own site and say that they wrote it. And I'm not okay with that. We do have sometimes we'll have somebody go out and find those, and Susie Bean used to be really good at doing this. She would go out, and she just had some sweetest pie things to say, and she would convince them to convert it from plagiarism into being what is good and right and decent. And so it would become a link to the site in an appropriate way. So, I mean, have I left anything out about reusing my stuff?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I think the same thing can be said for probably, you know, threads at Permies. I know that if you post a thread at Permies, post a thread from Permies to like something like Reddit or Facebook or Twitter, that's all great. That's all fine. Do that as much as you want. Or Pinterest. We've got a lot of threads with pictures in them that do great at Pinterest. And we get a fair amount of traffic from Pinterest from people doing that.
And obviously that's as long as there's a link to Permies.
Well, yeah, and they always have a link back to Permies. I don't think there's a way. I mean, if you took an image off of Permies and put it on your website and didn't link back to it and then put that on Pinterest, that's not okay. You know, you've got to make a link back to where you got it from. And at Permies, we try to do that ourselves. I know that when I find an interesting thing, and it's like, oh, look, and here's eight pictures that show how it's done, it's like, okay, well, which one is the one I'm going to put on Permies with a link back to where all the rest of them are. And I know, like, comic people, people who make comics or funny cartoons or something like that, I know that they've been getting upset that people have been just posting the cartoon, and it's like, no, you need to post a link, because that's like a big part of their income, is people will follow the link to see that cartoon and all the other cartoons, and then, of course, click on some of their advertising-ish things or something like that. So that's, you know, it's important to be respectful of their wishes on how they want their stuff to be managed, handled, fiddled with. All right. Somebody somewhere along the line asked how things are going with my laptop, and they thought I should cover that in a podcast. So I'm not sure if I've covered it before. I don't think I have in a previous.
Well, you've talked about when you did the switch. That was last year. You went from a Mac back to a PC, or from PC to a Mac and then back to PC. So I assume that's the same laptop.
So then they wanted to know, because I ordered the laptop in that podcast. So that's like a podcast from quite a while ago. And so then that's why they asked the question. They want me to, in a podcast, say, how are things going with my laptop? And so the laptop is over a year old now. I really don't recommend the company that I got it from. They had all kinds of lies and stuff. It turns out, and basically what I wanted to do is to buy a laptop where it would last me for 5 years. And because I don't want to go, because like a lot of people are buying a new laptop every year and a half or 2 years, and I don't want to do that. I want to just buy the one laptop, have it last for 5 years. and so I was under the impression that this laptop was an extremely high-grade laptop. One thing is that it arrived and it did not have any crapware on it, which was great. That was an enormous relief. However, the sound, it turns out what I have learned is that the sound card in it is crap, and I've been through all kinds of problems with that. I can't, and by problems I mean it still functions, it's always functioned. It's just that the sound, like the speakers themselves, don't put out enough sound so you can really hear something in a regular room. In the meantime, I went out and I bought an external speaker thing for it that's run entirely off of the USB power, and that works fine. So, and then the microphone, when you plug in a microphone to it, everything has this background hiss to it, and it's because the sound, I've learned, it's because the sound card is cheap. So they kind of cut a lot of corners. The other problem I was having is that, oh, it's got all this power. Yay, power. But whenever I would, like, take a video and say, okay, now write the video out to the file, it would go for about 30 seconds, and then the computer would turn off because it had overheated. And so it, what I've found was in the power management stuff is something for the CPU, and I've turned the CPUs down to 75% of normal in order to save power, which also makes it not overheat. So, oh, good, I paid for all this extra CPU power, but I can't use it because it'll overheat the laptop. It's had some other problems, too. Like, you go and you try and hibernate, and so you think, oh, look, I've got to get going. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make my laptop hibernate, pack it up. I'm going to then go far, far away, and then I'll pick up where I left off. So what you want to do is you want it to save everything and then stop using power. But instead, what it does is it throws everything away and then reboots the computer.
That's pretty useless.
Yeah, so it kind of does the opposite on both counts. It doesn't save anything at all, and it keeps consuming power. And so it's like, well, that's not a good feature. So when I've tried to contact the company about technical support, they basically it's like they won't give you any support of any kind unless you can utterly prove to. Basically, their first response is you made that problem, so you have to fix it. Really? The Hibernate thing. Oh, you've installed something that's messing up the Hibernate stuff. Really? I'm running the computer pretty much fresh from what you sent me. No, you installed something. That's why it's doing it. So I'm kind of thinking, like, this isn't customer support. This is customer denial. and it's kind of like, yeah, this. I wanted one thing. I think that there's room in the computer industry out there somewhere for somebody to make some serious bank. Because it's like, for this computer and a Mac, they charge $2,800. And as a PC, for this one that was supposed to be like Uber the best, extra good, it was $1,400. But it's like you could pick up one that's equivalent to this, full of crapware and stuff like that, for $1,000 at Costco. I just like the idea of somebody being able to say, we sell laptops that come without crapware. We use high-quality components, like for example, a high-quality sound card. You can actually hear the speakers, and everything is a high-quality this and a high-quality that, and we're going to guarantee it for 5 years. We want you to have a laptop that will last 5 years. I mean, it sounds like an eco thing. I mean, these things are full of toxic yuck in order to do what they do. And it's like, you know, this could be a vector to be able to reduce the amount of toxic yuck that you use just by buying fewer computers over time.
And one thing that people have to realize is that the use you make of your laptop is not the conventional use. And I just realized that when I started working for Permi stuff, is that you have so many tabs open that it sucks all the memory, and then you try to open a Word document or the equivalent for OpenOffice, and then next thing you know is that the computer is crashed.
Yeah, I have 100 windows open at any given time. And so I do push the computer pretty hard. All right. So I don't know. Is that a sufficient update to my laptop woes? Oh, I should also add that a virus got me. I had the ESET virus protection stuff, but a virus got past it. And ESET's supposed to be the very best. And so I did a clean wipe and a reinstall, and I decided that I was going to try Linux for 2 weeks. And now I have a lot of experience with Linux, far more than the average person. But my analysis has always been that in order to get Linux to sing for you, you kind of need to be a Power Linux user, and I don't want to be a Power Linux user. I've got a whole bunch of other stuff to get done. And in the end, I found out, like, okay, when I record podcasts over Skype, I need to use something that will record a Skype call. And it turns out there's nothing available on Linux that will do that. So then I'd have to bounce over to Windows in order to be able to do that, and then bounce back to Linux. And then it's like, okay, we're going to watch a documentary on Netflix Instant View and make a podcast about it. Not available on Linux. You got to go over to Windows and do that. And then so I go over there and come back. And it seems like there was one other thing. Video editing software. The video editing software that I found for Linux was crap. And so I kept going back over to Windows in order to edit videos. So in the end, it's like I just let Linux go. I just do everything off of the Windows side now. And all right. If people have more questions about that, I've got a thread at Meaningless Drivel where I think the name of the thread has to do with antivirus stuff or something like that. And in that thread, I've gone into a lot of detail about this laptop. But if people have more questions, then we can do that in a podcast or out there at Permies. You know, if you want to hear more about the laptop. But I do really think that somebody can have a business model on this. I mean, I'd be willing to pay $2,000 for a laptop that was going to be guaranteed to keep working for 5 years, and they could back it up. Just simple and clean and no crapware. That would be great. problems with a new camera. Oh, So at one point in time, I was doing the video for the light bulb stuff, and I had a tripod, and I set my camera on the top of the tripod, and then the idea was that I came through once a day and took a picture of all the light bulbs, and then I still needed my camera, but that was my only camera, so I popped out to the store and I bought what I thought was the exact same camera, only it had HD, you know, high def. And the great thing is that everything seemed to work pretty much the same. And then I ended up doing some videos with this new camera, and only to find out that it seems to add jiggle enhancement. So it's like, wow, so both cameras have this thing where it's called image stabilization, but I don't know if it's broken in the new camera or what, but everything is super duper jiggly in the new camera. And so I've been using it for like a year trying to figure out how to correct it. And then finally, it was a couple of days ago, I went out and I got something new, and we'll see if it gets better. But my cell phone, the BlackBerry that I've been using for so long to record podcasts and stuff like that, and it's still working great. It's over 2 years, and it seems like whenever a phone gets to be over 2 years, then it does that planned obsolescence thing and feigns illness, feigns death. Oh no, I'm dying, I'm breaking, I'm broken, you're going to have to go out and buy a new one. So it's, since it's past 2 years, I kept thinking it's coming up soon. So I picked up a new kind of cell phone-ish thing that I did verify that I can record podcasts with it. I've already tested it in that space. And it has apparently a really good video camera. And in fact, I've tried it, and it has like an anti-jiggle mode that's actually very anti-jiggly. And I really like it. This is the Samsung Galaxy Note 2. So I'm learning this, and it's, and so far it's been a painful learning experience. Actually, it hasn't been that bad. It's just, everything works so very differently. It's just going to take me time to ramp up.
Yeah, and BlackBerry have their own way of doing things that other cell phones don't use. Yeah, I've used BlackBerries and other cell phones, and it's always an adjustment.
I tried 4-5 years ago. I tried an iPhone for 3 days, and it made me crazy. My fingers are just too big. And then when getting this BlackBerry that I have now, I tried an Android for 3.5 hours, and I had the same problem. And then somebody suggested I get one of these, and when I went and looked it up on the internet, it said this is a really poor choice for anybody with small hands. And it's like, oh, sounds like a feature to me. So far, it has not been driving me crazy in that space. It has the little keyboard pop up, and I can type on it, and it works. So this has been so far. I think it's going to be a really good fit for me, but it's just the growing pains. I've at this point in time, I've done way too much research on getting a new camera, and I hope that this is going to turn out to be a long term solution. We'll see.
Well, that's the sad thing about technology, is that it's a long-term solution for 2 years.
Which, I really like the idea of having something that's, you know, if we could find a solution. It's like, I like the whole buy it for life stuff. And the idea is that you can, rather than the planned obsolescence, there's like at Reddit, there's something called Buy It for Life. And then we've got some Buy It for Life stuff out at the Frugal Forum at Permies. And I like this general philosophy of Buy It for Life, instead of like, oh, you're going to have to get one of these every 2 or 3 years or whatever. Cast iron pan's a good one. It will outlast you. And so you just have to have a little bit of knowledge about how to get this thing for you. So I think, you know, we should be able to do something similar with phones and cameras and stuff like that, and laptops. Anything that's got toxic gick in it, which phones and laptops do, then it would be great to, as a first step, see if we can minimize buying this crap. And, you know, so I like the idea of pursuing a path that's more of a buy it for life kind of path. The other thing is, like, these computers, like this laptop has 8 gigabytes of memory. And I remember the first computer that I ever worked on had 8 kilobytes of memory. What is that? 6 orders of magnitude less? That's a million times smaller, I think. Yeah, a million times smaller. And I was able to get things done. At some point in time, I remember CPM computers had 64K of memory. And it seemed like they could do a lot of things. And very quickly. And then later you get into the DOS world and it had 640K of memory. And wow, you could run some really amazing applications there. And they ran very, very fast. In fact, now with this super souped up computer running applications, they seem to be less responsive than things running in 640K on DOS. And I think as a software engineer, I'm going to tell you, it's not because you're running so many applications at once. It's that the applications are so poorly engineered. So inside of every large program is a small program struggling to get out.
Well, yeah, and basically the more the memory management, well, that's going to be technical, but the more the memory management is taken care of automatically, the less the programmer takes care of it, and then you run into problems where programs are not as optimized as they used to be.
So along these lines, one of the notes that I have to mention on today's podcast is that I burned through a dozen headsets. So there was a point in time where I had this headset that was my microphone for everything, and it worked out really good. The headset had just one problem. It hurt on my ears. And so then I was doing some podcasts with somebody, and they didn't have a headset, and they really needed a headset. And so I gave my headset to them, and then I thought to myself, I'll just go out and buy a new one, but that'll be more comfortable on my ears. Only to find out that there was something magical and awesome about that old headset, about its microphone. Because when I took any of these new headsets and plugged them in, the microphone was terrible. And it's like it would either have hiss in the background, or it would have like a whine, or it's like every single one had some kind of problem. Later I found out that, you know, it had to do with the cheap sound card was part of it, and that the old headset that I had bypassed the sound card. It had like its own sound card built in or something like that. So finally I ended up getting something. Matt Walker suggested that I get this special kind of microphone-like thing. And that fixed everything. And so now I've got a way of doing extremely high-quality sound for my videos. But I still – and I also have another headset that does pretty good sound, which is what I'm using right now, for the podcasts that are recorded over Skype. So – does it sound okay? Can you hear me all right?
Yeah. My headset might be the limitation on that podcast.
Well, I think, you know, I ended up going through a dozen different headsets. It's like I kept making these trips back to the store to get another one. Like, no, that one's – so then I started, like, buying them two at a time, thinking, okay, hopefully one of them will work, and then I'll just return the other one. And then that wasn't working either. It was ridiculous. So But now we're good. Now we're in good shape. I've learned more than I ever wanted to learn about sound cards and stuff like that.
It sounds like technology is giving you a hard time right now.
Yeah, it has been. And it's kind of like I think what's really going on is I'm learning. For all the stuff I was doing before, I was really rather lucky. I mean, the first camera that I had for video had something horribly wrong with the sound. And I think it's because it was an underwater camera. It had, you know, when I bought it, it's like, and it goes underwater down to like 100 meters or something. And I'm thinking like, oh, I don't expect to ever use that, but that's good to know. Oh, I remember why. Because the last camera I had, Bullock Brothers, and taking lots of pictures there, and they had a little canoe, and I took the canoe out, and I'm taking pictures, and it's like, oh, this is so good, this is so great. And then as I got back, then I went to stand up and get out of the canoe where you park the canoe, and, of course, you should never stand in a canoe. And then the canoe went out from under me, and I'm in the drink. And with my camera, and the camera did not survive that. So then when I'm at the store looking for cameras, and it goes underwater. Okay, I'm getting that one. Oh, no, that when it goes underwater, I think that what that means is that it makes the sound terrible. So I think that with the camera that I bought after that, I had really, really good luck. And it's still down there taking pictures of the light bulb thing, which is still going. It's been over a year now, and there's three light bulbs still going. So there's all that camera stuff. Technology has been, I think I just had these moments of really good luck in technology, and I had no idea how lucky I was until I tried to upgrade slightly. And then it was like I got burned. And then I ended up having to learn far more than I ever wanted to know. Next note I've got is a guy told me how to run my forums, and I did not agree. It turns out he has forums too, and they are currently a ghost town. I mean, it does seem like we get a lot of people telling us how to run things, a lot. And it's very rare that any of them have ever run anything. In fact, you know, I think this is the first time ever that somebody was telling us how we have to do things, and it turns out he actually did run a forum. And then I went and I looked at it, and there's like no one's posted there in 2 years. So I think it's best not to follow his advice. Oh, speaking of buy it for life, here's my next note, and this is my coffee-making invention. And so the first thing I have to say, and I don't know if I've said this in a podcast before, but hey, kids, listen to your Uncle Paul. If you're not currently drinking coffee, don't start. Uncle Paul is coffee's bitch for life. So, basically, when I was like 18 or 19, I was drinking something like 3 pots of coffee a day, and then I went to see the doctor and I had all these blisters all over my hands, and he said, "Oh, do you drink a lot of coffee?" "Yes." Well, these were apparently caffeine blisters on the palms of my hand, and there's like hundreds of them on each hand, and they really hurt. So I cut way back. Eventually, I've gone cold turkey several times. I once went a whole year without any caffeine at all, and that was a very unproductive year. So I've kind of reached this compromise where I allow myself one cup of coffee every morning, and that's how I figure on functioning for life. I just sort of recognize that I'm owned by coffee, and I made the mistake of letting it in my life, and now that's just the way things function. So I used to have, you know, the drip coffee makers. For a while I did cold press coffee because that's the way my granddad did it.
By cold press, you mean French press, do you?
No. French press is the last thing I did before doing what I do now.
Okay.
Because Jocelyn, you know, turned me on to it. But the cold press stuff is sometimes they refer to it as a toddy, coffee making style or a cold water process. And so what it is that you would have this container, you put like a pound of coffee in and a bunch of water, you set it aside overnight, and then there's a plug in the bottom with a filter, and you pull the plug out, and it fills a carafe, and that gives you like this super coffee concentrate. So then you boil water, and then you'll pour like a few tablespoons of the concentrate into your coffee, so it has less acid and stuff like that. But it kind of burns through the coffee really fast, and it does make for a coffee that's a much smoother cup of coffee. But it tastes a little different too, so I just kind of felt like it was wasteful of coffee compared to other processes. So and then Jocelyn got me back onto she's the one who introduced me to the French press. I'd never used a French press before, so got me back onto a hot process. And so here are the problems that I had. The cold process was fine, but it was in a plastic thing. And I didn't like doing it in a plastic thing. And then the filter that it used, you need to be replaced like a few times a year. And so I don't like that. It had this disposable factor. Then for a while there were the drip machines, and it seems like they would last like 2 or 3 years before they would break, and then you would need to get another one.
And they're made of plastic a lot.
There's a lot of plastic there, and I really want to get away from the plastic. The French presses, I would try to get ones that were pure glass and stainless steel. And the carafes kept breaking, the glass carafe in the French press. And you can replace them, but it was like, you know, now I've got this annual shopping trip to replace the glass carafe or to try and buy another French press that's going to hopefully last longer. And the last time that the carafe broke, it's like I needed – it broke in the morning before I had my coffee. It's like, I have coffee here. So what am I going to do? So I had a 4-cup glass measuring cup, a Pyrex thick glass measuring cup. And I just put my coffee in there and the hot water and let it sit. And I'm thinking, like, basically I just need to emulate a French press. And so then I had something that was effectively a fine strainer. And then I just poured the coffee through that, and then I had a cup of coffee. And it's like the strainer was pure stainless steel. The Pyrex glass is pure glass. And I'm kind of looking at this, and I'm kind of thinking, like, this short-term solution that I came up with is vastly superior to anything else I've ever done. And it's like this Pyrex 4-cup measuring cup is something that I bought at a yard sale 10 years ago. And it still hasn't broken. And, of course, when it's not busy making coffee, it's a measuring cup. So, I believe I have a lifetime solution that contains zero plastic. And so I've been doing it this way now for about a year. And I think it's a fantastic solution. It's excellent. It's working great. The coffee tastes good. I have not encountered anything that I would call a flaw in the system. In fact, it's way easier to clean than a French press system. There's nothing that there's no filters to throw out. I know that like with the drip system, then you can get. In fact, I had this like filter that was a fixed gold looking thing, so that you didn't have to buy paper filters. And then of course the French press doesn't have anything you throw out either. But it's just The French press requires a little bit of cleaning, and that's the other thing too, is like it's got that screen in it, but the little screen in the French press was starting to like wear out and get frayed around the edges, And I'm thinking, like, wow, so there's another disposable piece in the French press. I would like to think that for the French press that there is going to be a glass carafe that's going to be like a thick Pyrex glass that will last. But, and the other thing is like for the top, I thought it was stainless steel, but it has since started to flake.
Yeah, it's plastic.
That underneath it's actually plastic, and I was suckered.
Yeah, actually, I was surprised you could find one with stainless steel top, because all the French press I've seen always have plastic at the top.
Oh, which, speaking of which, Adrian, English is your second language, and your first language is?
French.
Be an expert in French press.
Actually, I broke one carafe before, and we've had the same carafe for 7 years now.
Okay, all right. So then you guys must be less clumsy than I am or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. I do know that, if nothing else, that stainless steel screen is starting to go. And then, yeah, the plastic that it was made of was starting to bother me. And so when the glass broke, I was kind of thinking, like, I need to come up with something really, you know, different. And so I, in fact, while drinking that first cup of coffee from the 4-cup measuring cup, I went on to the internet and started to try and find something that's like, can I find something that's purely a French press? And it took me a couple of days to realize, you know what? The system that I'm using, why don't I just keep using the system I'm using now forever? Why do I have to go get a French press? So anyway, all I wanted to do, I put a note in here as a little tidbit for a podcast to just share this Buy It For Life. I really like the Buy It For Life idea. And this is simple and plus stacking functions.
Yeah.
So basically, the whole coffee making thing is this. I did end up buying a better stainless steel little cupperoo thing that has the mesh. It's a finer filter and it's a little deeper, so that when I pour the coffee in, there's a better chance that it's going to be a quick process. And we have a thread about it at Permies.
That's what I was going to say.
All right, moving through my list here. Podcasts available for purchase only. So we're shifting podcasts. So right now, podcasts 1 through 40 are only available for purchase. And over the next 4 or 5 months, I think we're going to get all of the podcasts up through 200 available for purchase only. And maybe we'll take out some of the best of the old ones and make them available for free. But for people that want to go and get the older podcasts for free, you might want to go grab them now before they're also for purchase only. But it's like, I think we put 40 podcasts into a zip file up on Scubly for $4.50. So I kind of feel like that's like a dime a podcast. So having a hard time getting really weepy about that one. And we're going to try and get a bunch of other stuff out there to Scubly. I mean, the Scubly thing is starting to work out for the podcast, but I think most of the podcasts are always going to be put out for free. And then eventually they'll be rolled into something that's not so free.
Well, and here's the problem is that as soon as we put a new podcast out, one gets bumped off iTunes. So that's one of the reasons why you want to put them at Scubly.
Right. We've got that whole thread out at Permies and the Tinkering Forum about podcasts gummed up in a whole different way. And it's like there was, I don't know, like 20 different little factors. And then I found out that to put the podcast out, it cost me $6,000. And it's like, no, this, you know, something's just got to change. And it's been a big headache in a lot of ways. So something's just got to change, and it just seems like this can be a system. I don't want to put out a podcast in the future that's a duplicate of a podcast we've already made. I suppose it's possible that I've already committed this crime, and if I did commit this crime, I didn't know. I'm trying really hard to only put out podcasts with new content, and I do feel like at some point in the future, I'm going to be all done making podcasts because I covered everything that I needed to cover. Although I do enjoy the podcast format that I do now, where we're doing like multiple podcasts to review one book. I'm kind of in this weird twisted space. So forgive me while I go into this bizarre area where I made some logical conclusions. And it's based upon, and it all starts with a speculation. I start with a speculation that with the things that I've done, I've saved thousands of lives. Like, there's people, they've stopped using toxic GIC, and because they've stopped using toxic GIC, they did not get cancer or some other serious illness and die of it. And so then it's like, okay, thousands of people. I'm going to say that maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just my ego's too big. I'm too arrogant. But I came to this. I had this thought that the work that I'm doing has saved thousands of lives. And then it's kind of like, well, you know, it works out to be a certain number of lives per day of work, per day of effort. And then I started thinking like, well, you know, it's kind of like for every hour of work I put in, I save a life. And then it occurred to me that there's this corollary. And the corollary is that if I go goof off for an hour, somebody dies. That's a life I didn't save. And so then for ages now, I've kind of had this thing where it's like I keep doing this all day long every day, and I can't stop myself from doing it. And at the same time, it seems like doing this much work all day long every day probably isn't a good thing, but I can't seem to stop. I have to do it. And then it's like I made this logical conclusion, and I kind of thought to myself, maybe it's my subconscious came to that conclusion years ago, and that's why I do this. I don't know. I'm powerfully compelled to do the things that I do. And so now that I'm logically looking at this, it's kind of like, oh shit! So I don't know. It kind of becomes this. I feel that's kind of a twisted thing, and at the same time, it's incredibly important. So it must go on. It must go on. What was I going to make a point in here somewhere?
I don't know. I kind of lost your where you were going there, but you shared the idea of saving life.
Well, and so I thought that I had to mention that, and it was going to tie back into something else. And
well, that was the podcast content and the new format you're using to reviewing books.
Oh, right. And so basically what was happening is I stopped reading all books. If a book arrived, I couldn't really open it. And so that's like Sepp Holzer stuff. It's like I need to read this book, and I'm not reading it. And I think that it's like, you know, okay, I could sit down and I could read this book, and it will take me probably, you know, 5 or 6 hours to read the whole book. And it's like, it's not a high enough priority for all the things that I need to do. It doesn't make the priority list. But now if I sit down and I do this podcast format, then, it meets the priorities and I can get it done. And then I'm back to reading books again. That's why I like this book format so much, and so I've got we finished that Edo period book, and I'm currently working on Botany in a Day. We're about halfway done with that one, so I need to get started on Sepp Holzer's new book Desert of Paradise, and so that one's going to be the next one in the series. So I like that format. So I think we're going to make podcasts for a long time, but you know which channels are going to go through, I'm not sure. We're going to keep it flexible. We'll keep trying different things and see what happens. The next item I got on my list is Pippa, SOPA, and piracy. So for a while there was this threat that the internet would get totally screwed up. Basically, it would be crazy people would get to determine whether a website is allowed to exist anymore. And so anybody that gets a lot of traffic and tends to piss people off would be shut down instantly. And so it's like, well, you know, there goes the internet. It's gone. So fortunately, those laws did not go through. But now, of course, there's new laws that are basically the exact same thing that are trying to be snuck in through different channels. My point on all this is that I think it's the pirates. I mean, granted, the people that are trying to shut down the internet are lobbyists and lawyers for big media, but they're just reacting to the piracy stuff. And the pirates are out there saying, hey, we're not hurting anybody. And I just kind of feel like, you know, this war between the pirates and those lobbyists is going to end with no more internet. And you know, people might say, oh, that'll never happen. And it's kind of like, really? You think that'll never happen? I mean, that's basically what those laws said. Is it's like, here, we'll give anybody the tools to shut down a website. And so, what, you think, like, permies.com isn't pissing somebody off? You know? I think any website of interest is going to piss off somebody. And then all that somebody's got to do is say, I don't like them. Shut them down. And boof, they're gone. So, I kind of feel like it's a pretty dangerous thing. And, of course, there's a lot of people who really want to control what you're allowed to think, and they would very much like to see the internet go away. The internet's the only thing that's making it's the biggest thorn in their side right now. So I think that it can go away, and right now it's very likely that it will go away. And if anybody listening to this podcast, if you support any kind of piracy in any way, you know, you listen to a song that you didn't pay for, that's supposed to be a paid for thing, or watch a movie, or anything like that, then you're contributing to the problem. You're feeding the monster. And that monster plays a major role in bringing the internet down. And I realize I am in an extreme minority on this position. I think most people pirate stuff willy-nilly and don't give it another thought. They are for it because they do it. I know for a fact that there's a lot of great permaculture content that exists that is designed to come out as a book or a DVD, and it's been shelved because what's the point? There's, you know, it's going to cost money to put it out, and it'll be pirated instantly, and you won't make any money, so why bother? So I think it's hurting everybody. It's hurting everything. Let's see. Oh, I've got a note here to talk about food forests instead of orchards. Surely I've mentioned this stuff in podcasts before. It's like one of the most painful things to ever experience is when you get to a property and they want to do permaculture and they're currently spraying, whether it's organic or not, they're working hard to fight all kinds of different problems, and they have an orchard. And they're trying to care for the trees in the orchard. And of course, the thing is it's like, well, you got a monocrop. And if you were to take out 90% of the trees in your orchard and replace them with a diversity of species of trees, then you don't have to spray your trees. Everything will all work out and take care of itself. But that step of taking out 90% of the existing trees, I mean, here are trees that are productive and awesome, and you're saying permaculture is cutting out 90% of the trees. Cutting down trees is like the thing. Yep, that's correct. As painful and brutal as that is, that's part of the program. And there are people out there that are going to have an orchard, and they're going to say, it's a permaculture orchard. And let's just say that I'm of a different school of thought. I think permaculture orchard is an oxymoron. So I would say that when you're in a like you've got 100 apple trees all together, I think you're going to take out 90 of them and thin the herd. and you'll end up with 10 apple trees and 90 other trees all mixed up.
And of course, some people can do a transition, I guess, where they could chop off some of the trees one year and then plant some other trees than apple trees and then do some more the year after, and that's a bit more, it's a bit smoother, I would assume.
Yes, yes. And I was at an orchard a few months ago, and the guy said, we have to take out this whole row of trees for whatever reason. And then we'll put, you know, a row of apples in there. And I said, you know what? I would like to make a suggestion that when you take out that row of trees, that you replace it with diversity. And so, because throughout the farm, it's like we're traveling around the farm, and it's like, you know, here's plums, and here's peaches, and here's apricots, and here's cherries, and here's apples. And it's like, okay, so rather than putting those like this, you know, here you've got 100 trees and are all cherries, you know, and here you got 100 trees and are all apple. So rather than that, what if like this row is like, you know, apple and then cherry and then a nut tree and then a black locust and then something else and something else, and then it's like every 10th tree is an apple. And every 10th tree is a cherry. And every 10th tree is whatever. So now you have a lot more diversity. And I think that you're going to have a lot fewer problems to deal with. So he did not like that idea at all. He thought that was stupid.
Well, I guess one other problem with orchards is that the trees are all in straight lines where they don't really follow contour or take into account what really, the relief is around the orchard. So that's another issue, that even if you replace one of the rows, you just solve one problem, but not the whole problem.
Right. I think adding texture to the landscape would be another great thing to do. I think another great one would be to, like, and let's start them from seed as opposed to transplants. And then, of course, you know, if I were to suggest that, then I think that would really freak them out. Because, you know, of course, grafting is the name of the game for them.
Yeah, I learned something very interesting, and that's not about apples, but that's about grapes. That apparently in Europe, there's very, very few grape vines that are on the actual rootstock, or the same rootstock as the variety of grapes growing in them, and that's because there's a disease or it might be an insect that attacks the grapes if they're on the actual rootstock. So they always graft it on an American rootstock so that the plant does not get attacked. So I thought to myself, well, maybe the problem is that they have not bred grapes from seeds for a long time. That might be the solution, where you use propagation by seeds to solve the bug problem or the disease problem.
True, true, true. The next item I have on my list is LED lights. And I've been asked this question about 150 times. How do you feel about LED lights? And I think that they're great for a nightlight. I think that they're great to put in a spot where they give off enough light, where they're really, really dim, or as a flashlight, they're great. But I'm not a fan of using them as a primary light. I know that you can get bulbs that have, like, you know, 30 little LED lights on them, and they're bright, and they'll put out enough light to basically, you know, be the equivalent of a 60-watt light bulb, but they only use 5 watts or something like that. But the light quality is not that great, and the electronics that are inside of the bulb in order for them to be able to throw off that much light is, it's kind of like the whole thing with the laptop or the cell phone. There's all this electronic stuff inside of it, which is really toxic and difficult to properly dispose of, whereas the incandescent light doesn't have that. And so, whereas when you got like a little simple nightlight, then usually there's not much in the way of electronics. Or the flashlight, it's a very direct connection. It's not that severe. Then the next point is it's like, you know what? I'm currently spending for all of my lighting needs about $8 per year in electricity. So it's kind of like I'm having a hard time seeing a need to try a different light bulb. There's a lot of controversy over the quality of light from an LED, and there's a lot of people who are like, oh, no, they fixed that. And it's kind of like, no, I don't think that they really did. They're working on it still. I just feel like the quality of light that comes off of an incandescent light bulb is the best. And frankly, when somebody says, you know, I want to switch out to an LED light bulb so that way I can save money, my thought is, how much money are you spending now? And maybe you should focus on just your lighting habits. So, like, if you're trying to illuminate the inside of your house at night so it's like sunshine during the day in the house, then I kind of feel like that might not be a good way to go. And I think a lot of houses, it's like, why do you keep your curtains closed all day when the sun is out? If you opened your curtains, the room would be plenty illuminated, and you wouldn't need any lighting of any kind. That would be 0 watts per hour. So it's like, when asking about this, and then the other one is like, the light bulbs cost $40. And I did the math, and then, you know, after half the lifespan of the LED, then I get my money back. I'll start getting return on investment. And I've been reading from a lot of people that they've been seeing the LED lights catch on fire, and they've also, you know, and then they've been experiencing a high failure rate with some of them. Some of them are lasting an incredibly long time and doing fine, but some of them have been having serious problems. I just feel like the incandescent bulb is a far cleaner solution. And then, you know, really when it comes to quality of light, we're starting to talk about, will you experience any kind of health problems with this? And is it worth fooling with? I mean, how much of a problem do you have? And if you want to save energy, rather than the idea of spending $40 to save $40, how about a rocket mass heater? You know, how about something that's going to really save energy? Why should you even have the LED light bulb conversation until you've resolved your heating stuff? So, no, I'm not a big fan of the LED lights. I think for standard lighting in the home, incandescent is still superior.
And so earlier you were talking about your light bulb experience. Did you have an LED bulb in there?
Oh, with the experiment?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then there were 7 bulbs in the beginning. So there was 4 CFLs, 2 incandescents. One was a long life incandescent, and one was like a standard incandescent, and 1 LED. So now, at this point in time, 3 of the 4 CFLs have died. 1 CFL is still going, and it's been more than a year. So, like, at this point in time, I think that we're at something like 1,500 hours or 2,000 hours, and, of course, the bulb's rated for 10,000 hours. So we're, like, you know, 10 or 20% into its lifespan. Standard incandescent died at about 1,000 hours of use, and the long-life incandescent is supposed to last for 5,000 hours. So, in theory, it has a bunch more time left to go. And the LED is still going. And it's supposed to last 20,000 hours. But at some point in time, you know, I've got to turn off this experiment.
Well, especially if you move to the land.
Yeah, if I buy land and stuff like that, then yeah, yeah. The experiment will have to stop. I suppose I could, you know, depending on what it's like there, I could just pause it here and move it over there and have it resume over there. It's possible. It could happen. All right. Next item on the list. Oh, we have new forums at permies.com. We probably have, I don't know, 25 new forums. I mean, we've over the last 2 or 3 months, we have been creating a lot of new forums. We made a Hoogle Culture forum. I mean, we could probably pull it up and look at all the lists and lists and lists of all the new forums that we've made. But basically, we've been getting so much traffic. In fact, the big thing is now is that people will go, and if you're at the top of all the forums, there's a link that's to recent topics. And if you click on that, it'll just show you all the threads in order of which one has is the most recent. And if you go there at like 7 or 8 in the evening, it will usually it's more than 100 that will say today on them. So there's more than 100 active conversations at Permies on any given day. But we're dividing them up into more and more forums because the old forums were just getting to be so busy and so packed. And now it's going to be a lot easier to find the things that are of a narrower field. So now we have one forum that's entirely dedicated to nothing but Hoogle Culture.
Yep.
That forum's already very busy.
Yeah. Well, it's the first one at the top, so sometimes people will post their question there because they think, oh, that's the first one that people will answer. But no, that's just more work for us, and we have to move the subject to another forum.
Yeah, maybe we better shuffle that around better. Maybe we should make a forum where it's called something like, this is not the forum you're looking for. And then post in that forum, then, we have to move it. Everything in that forum has to be moved. As opposed to now, we're trying to like figure out, well, does this belong in the Hoogle Culture, or does it need to be moved somewhere? So, maybe we should shuffle those things around a little bit. But it seems like every day we're having conversations about how to optimize something on the site.
Well, and now we even have a beginner forum, so that's going to help some people that are not sure where to post.
Right, we have the beginner gardening forum,
yeah.
Or garden for beginners, or something like that. And the idea, and I haven't even looked at that. I created the forum, I moved a few things in there, and I haven't been back since. Is it going good?
I don't know. I have the mobile version of Permies right now.
So that was, what was it, about 4 days ago, 5 days ago that I created that, and I haven't looked back. I should probably check in there and see how things are going.
Well, there are 50 subjects in there, or 50 posts, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
So it's so small.
Yeah, and so, but hopefully people who are feeling like, because we had, it seems like in 1 week, I had 4 different people say, yeah, I don't post out there because I kind of feel like I need to know what I'm doing better than I do in order to ask questions, because everybody seems so advanced. And so we created this forum with the idea of hopefully it'll be a place where beginners can feel a little bit more comfortable. Let's see. Oh, we gave away the tickets to the SIP event. And so we gave away we had 2 tickets to give away because SIP's coming. And I think all the tickets to all the events are now sold out. Do you know?
I haven't checked with them lately.
Minnesota and Bozeman were sold out, and all they had left were like 2 in California. But that was like several days ago, so I imagine that they're full now. They're all gone. But we had 2 tickets, and we as part of the promotion process. And if this is the first that you're hearing about it, oh, pod people, then you might want to get signed up for the Daily-ish email. And through the Daily-ish email, we let people know, like, oh, we got stuff we're giving away. And pretty much every week we've been giving away books and DVDs or tickets to events, stuff like that. And we even have some stuff that we do that's only for people on the Daily-ish email. So the Daily-ish email is the place. Oh, and then the next note that I have is promoting other sites. So we have all kinds of stuff in place So if you're a blogger or you have a website that's related to Permies somehow, we heartily encourage you to post your stuff out at Permies. And because, like, as I go and I travel other sites and I try and let people know about Permies, there's a lot of sites that say, we don't allow anybody to make links to their own stuff. And I want to make it clear that at Permies, we are not that way. I want you to make links to your own stuff, because your stuff is the best based upon your standards. And so come on out, post. You got a new blog? Come out and post it at Permies. Best to find an old thread. The best thing is for an old thread, but maybe there's not an old thread that matches what your new blog is about. And so in which case, you know, you got to make that call. But don't just say, here's the link. You know, give us like a paragraph description of what the blog is about and how it applies to us, and then make a link. And it's totally legit. Keep in mind that the staff is constantly deleting spam. So make sure that you make it clear that you're one of us, that you're part of our community, and you're just making a link to your blog. And, you know, we've had a lot of people that are bloggers that are getting a lot of traffic to their blog from Permies, and I think that that is fantastic. I like the idea that we can be a place that people can come and learn about other awesome resources. And, of course, if you make a link back to us, that would be lovely. That would be nice. And as a corollary to that, we're currently fishing for sponsors for the podcasts and the forums and things like that. So if you've got a product that you think would be a good match for us and you're willing to part with money, then let us know. We're also doing some collaborative swaps and stuff. Contact Adrian for more information. So if you know, link for link and banner for banner, things of that for sites that are kind of like related. We want to make sure people find out about you, and we like the idea that you'll let your peeps know about us. So we're ramping up in that level of collaboration. So, and that's the end of my list.
And that's the end of mine, too.
Oh, good. So, if you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com, where we share stuff. And like homesteading and permaculture, you know, all the time.